Recently, there was a two-week period where no rap song was present on the Billboard Hot 100 Top 40.
This was the first time since February of 1990 that a rap song was absent from the Top 40, an end to a 35-year run.
Rap has returned to the charts with Megan Thee Stallion's track Lover Girl debuting at number 38.
But what caused the two-week lapse for the genre of rap?
And was this a blip or the beginning of a change in the industry?
I'm Rihanna Winter.
I'm Jason Acuna.
And this is Unbothered by WFSU. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
What kind of music have you been listening to recently?
Well, recently, honestly, I've been kind of all over the place in terms of genres, which is odd for me because I used to kind of have some staple genres.
Yeah.
Rap being one of them.
Yeah, it hasn't been a really huge year for rap. The last album I can really name was Doechii's album that came out at the end of last year, but this whole year I haven't heard a lot of big rap news.
Yeah, and it seems that we aren't the only ones, as we mentioned earlier, the rap genre has taken a hit on the Billboard charts. And so we wanted to sit down with an expert in music and the music industry to learn more about what might be going on.
Yeah, so I'm Daryl Tookes, and I am the director of the Julian Cannonball and Nat Adderley Music Institute at FAMU, Florida A&M University, yeah.
And so what are your initial impressions hearing that rap has been absent from the top 40 for 2 weeks?
Yes, so thank you for bringing that to my attention. I mentioned it to some students, and they were a little surprised as well, because folks in their 20s, it's all they've ever known, such a popular art form, right? And so we are in Grammy season as well.
Mm-hmm.
With me, so radio audience, you can't see this, but with me I have the most current Billboard magazine, which is the Bible of the charts in the industry. And the music industry, right? Yeah. And so it's packed with ads for people for your consideration. It has a rapping on it that is the artist who performed this year at the Super Bowl, you know, Kendrick Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
The cover story is Bad Bunny, who's performing at the Super Bowl in 2026.
Next year.
Yeah. And so this is Grammy season. It makes you wonder if there's any entanglement, any connection between the fact that for the first time in 40-ish years?
Yeah, nearly 40, 35.
35 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going back to the beginning of rap in the Bronx where I was born, you know, in the 1970s. I was born before that, but rap was born on Sedgwick Avenue in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And I experienced that. So I'm just wondering if there's any connection, and we probably can't know, but audience, if you could see this magazine and how full of expensive ads it is, how much money is now. So I'm wondering about that. I'm wondering about the overall zeitgeist of the community. Is something going on in the world where these rappers are talking about things that are now maybe not as mainstream?
Right.
And that's something I'd like to address. But specifically to your point, surprised me as well.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I think it honestly surprised a lot of people, specifically because it's not like popular artists in the rap genre have disappeared. You know, we're still hearing about them pretty frequently. And I'm personally still hearing rap music on the radio. So that was, you know, I'm still hearing it frequently. I'm hearing it on social media. You know, a lot of the trending audios are from the rap genre. And so seeing as rap has returned to the top 40, do you think these past two weeks were maybe an outlier, or are we seeing the beginning of a trend or maybe an evolution of the genre?
I think evolution is probably the better word, because what I was getting to, and thank you for that question, it takes me right back to where I'm trying to head with this.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these high-profile artists are now at a point where they're saying some things that might be a little uncomfortable to others, but they can say them because their fan base is so strong. They can talk about subjects that might be a little bit ticklish, a little bit controversial.
Right.
And that's not what pop is about. Pop music really means popular.
Right.
Look no further than Michael Jackson, who wanted to be the king of pop.
Mm-hmm.
He had been a major artist since he was a little boy, but he wanted that label because of the implications of what pop really means, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen a lot of changes going on. That two-week outlier, perhaps, where rap wasn't in the top 40, is something we really won't know about until we see the evolution of rap. Where does it go next? Where does popular music trend next?
Yeah, and obviously it you can definitely see the influence that rap had on pop music and the pop music genre. You know, a lot of the drum samples you'll hear in the pop music genre now that you didn't hear prior to rap's dominance. So it's definitely left its mark on other genres, and we'll see where that goes within its own genre. And playing off of that a little bit, what role, if any, do you feel as though streaming has kind of played in these current trends and what's going on?
Well, that's huge because it's opened an infinite possibility. So the music industry is growing vastly and rapidly, mm-hmm. but largely because it's expanding and it's easy to have an entry level place in the music industry. It's not like when Daryl Tuke signed to Capitol Records in the 1980s, you know, it was a major occurrence. With now you can put out music on your own. So everywhere, right. your distribution channels are no longer blocked. Mm-hmm. You can make your music, make your beat, do whatever you do, and you can get it out there. So that allows a phenomenon of success and popularity to happen in ways that seem random. Even if corporations are involved, mm-hmm. the illusion can always, you know, outweigh the reality of what's happening. So it looks like that large open portal, not only is it opening the gates for independent artists, but it's also letting the large players say, aha, you know, we can have a hand in this as well. So streaming is now, as you know, more prominent than a downloading. Downloading is one of the least ways of revenue in the industry.
Right.
I think vinyl has outweighed CDs at this point.
There's had a bit of a resurgence, yeah.
Yeah, resurgence of vinyl. That's LPs, you know, long play. And the quality, the aesthetic, the whole experience. So, but streaming, to your point, has allowed the entry level into the field to just be wide open.
Absolutely. And going off of that a little bit, how has streaming maybe impacted how the Billboard Hot 100 corrugates its information and gathers who is trending and what is hot?
Yes, I've got to give them credit that they managed to find a way to have charts, Billboard, that is, managed to find a way that has charts that represent what's going on in streaming and how that streaming is also resulting in sales. It was tricky for the longest because keep in mind, in your lifetime, let alone mine, the whole concept of sound scan and being able to have some sort of code that confirmed that a record actually was selling,
yeah.
it didn't exist, before, at the retail level, right? And so it was a simple thing, you know, just have a major big store to buy a bunch of records and you're not seeing how many consumers are buying. But right. So that changed. And then we got digital coding so that when the audio is playing over the air, there's also ways to track now. So Billboard has mm-hmm. done a heroic job, an impossible job of finding ways to track all that data and to put together charts that represent various ways that product, records, music is popular today.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And backing up a little bit, can you go into kind of the cultural juggernaut that rap and hip-hop have been for the past 35 years to kind of make this conversation one worth having?
Yes, you're right, because there are two things. We're dancing around a little bit on the economy of it, but also there's a cultural part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those things work together, and they pull in different ways. So rap started out as party music. You know, groups right. like the Sugar Hill Gang right. and Curtis Blow, and it's, you know, just in the park having a good time and mm-hmm. shooting some hoops and that kind of thing. I experienced that. So, and then somewhere more what they call socially conscious music started happening with certain groups, mm-hmm. with certain political points of view. NWA comes to mind, other groups, you know. If I start naming groups and artists, I might get too far down that, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes,
I think everyone listening here knows that as well. Okay, so, but then that took us to something we really weren't so happy about, and that was years of the gangster rap scene.
Right.
That maybe talented people came through it, granted, and as I tell my students, Daryl Tuke is not here to promote my own personal aesthetic. We're just observing, investigating. So when that happened, so much happened. You know, look no further than Biggie Smalls and other people who got very popular and who are no longer with us, right?
Right.
So sooner than later, or sooner but later, or not soon enough, some changes have started happening. And so you had the East Coast music and the West Coast music.
Mm-hmm.
And today's rap also has had the appearance of women at least looking like they are in charge of their own journey.
Right, absolutely.
Right? And so because it didn't start with rap, if you just go back even to the jazz age or go back to the classical age, there's always been misogyny,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
There's always been misogyny. So there were so many women who were critical to the development of rap, not only as artists, but as managers, and they weren't properly credited. And mm-hmm. so this has been a thing. So in more recent years, we've seen certain female artists emerge as not only popular performers, record sellers, but also people who look like they're in charge of their careers.
Right.
Whether they are or they are not, we'll never know, but we do know symbolically what shows that these women are in charge.
Yeah.
So move forward a little bit, but there have been other issues. And to the question of what's going on in the mentality of the community, some of these very popular artists, my students have told me, are taking on subjects like misogyny, mm-hmm. like their own personal struggles with addiction, their struggles with depression,
yeah.
The church and homophobia. They're right. taking on subjects that are not so popular. They are popular privately in conversations where you have trust, but to actually put those statements in your art form takes either courage or a combination of courage and independence from the system. So I think that's some of what we're seeing too. The other part is the economic driver of it, and you talked about sampling. And, you know, how rap is, you know, speaking over records and this kind of thing. Mm. So as more artists are doing their own creative original work, sampling is not as big a part of it. It's going to be a big part of it always, but I'll give you an example. Tupac Shakur is looked at as a certain way by a lot of people, and I knew the family, but the point is that he's looked at, he's revered by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
He got out of jail for something people say he didn't do, but he did a record. The record came out within a year. He himself was dead. But that record has songs on it that were written by some of my heroes, like Burt Bacharach and Hal David, with Tupac rapping on that. So who owns the songs? Who owns the product? It's a complex economic system.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack.
Mm-hmm. Right, and a lot goes into the rap genre, specifically when you mentioned sampling with sample clearances and things like that. But it also brings in other genres to the rap genre that, I mean, I discovered a lot of older songs that I probably wouldn't have heard of if they weren't sampled in a rap song. So it definitely kind of brings a lot of things together in a way that other genres don't. So
that's perfect. I can tell you, and shame on me for not mentioning this before. Yeah, so I toured with Sting. I did some work with him and recorded and stuff. And during that time, I guess Sean Combs was known as, he had a name, Puff Daddy.
Puff Daddy, I think.
But, yeah. So, but he did a song with the widow of Biggie Smalls, and it was a song from The Police.
Mm-hmm.
Every Breath You Take.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. And so, well, their music is well known and you know, all that, but it definitely was a resurgence of what was going on with Sting and all that we were doing. I mean, everywhere we went, that was a big thing too. People were into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Stadium shows, yeah.
And yeah, and then they ended up, there were some big issues with sample clearance there, right?
Exactly.
And then I believe the police ended up getting if not most of the revenue from Song at the Time.
Yeah, yeah. Because it was a song.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Every Breath You Take was, everyone could hear that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that even you can actually be an innocent dilettante in that world and not realize that you don't have a right just to use somebody's music. But now we know. And now when you go to get clearances, whether they're through ASCAP or BMI or Hadfox or whatever, now when you do those things, you're now, okay, there's a way to do it. And you do it properly. And there's so many cases that we could look at like that. But to your point, that has been an integration of the concept of rap and hip-hop into other genres.
And so what are your thoughts on kind of the future of the music industry and of genres in general and the rap genre? You know, something that I've kind of seen some people say is that genres themselves are kind of getting more blended. We're seeing a lot of aspects from certain genres carry over into other genres, whereas there used to be very clear and hard distinctions between certain things. Like, you play a guitar this way in country, and you play it this way in rock and roll, and, you know, you can't do it, you can't move that around. So how do you feel about the future of
genres
in the industry?
Great question. So much of what has happened in my fortunate lifetime is to see these things ebb and flow, and to be able to look back and know that in the moment, we were just experiencing new music or something that helped us through. Mm. Look no further than the assassination of JFK. Mm. And within a year or two, you've got what became known as the British invasion. Mm. It made us happy. Right. There's a time when they first came on the scene when the Beatles were on two record labels in the top 100. And one of the songs was a cover of an Isley Brothers song.
Right. Yeah.
You see, but we needed it. That's the same time that we get Burt Bacharach and Hal David again. I'm mentioning some really great writers. So it's a time that music is always reflecting what's going on. It's always projecting what might happen next and trying to help humanity to move forward. So in my youth in Tallahassee, because though I was born in Bronx and moved back to New York after college for a long time, I was away from Tallahassee for 4 decades. Mm-hmm. But in my time here, there was that blending that you're mentioning, that blending, you could turn on AM radio and hear Aretha Franklin followed by Crosby, Stills, and Nash
right.
on the same radio station.
Yeah.
It was popular. It was helping us. It was showing us. By the way, those are the same years that Motown Records made their mark with artists like the Supremes and Temptations and all. Yeah. So if you look at it strictly from marketing and demographics, then you could see, well, I guess these genres and subgenres, they exist to get the most out of the economic model.
Right.
You know, without getting too elaborate about that, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's what moves people, what makes people happy, what makes comforts people in difficult times, what gives us something to dance to or whatever. I just saw recently some guys who were really, really meaningful to me, helpful. The late Maurice White, the founder of Earth, Wind & Fire, was a mentor of mine. And just recently, there was a 2-hour special that was put on by the Grammys where they performed. And during the month of September, that song, September, got more streams and airplay than it had in a long time. So it's a seasonal kind of thing. What kind of group is Earth, Wind & Fire? When they were starting, Maurice White wanted to have a spiritual message and energetic songs and Brazilian influences. And even his best friend, Ramsey Lewis, said, this can't happen. But it did. It took a long time, a lot of hard work, but it did. So to your point, Daryl Tukes is very hopeful that as the genres continue to blend and as influences are crossbred, that the economic model will be justified as well. It won't control the creative process, that it will be seen as, this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the country music world, I've got a son and daughter who play music together and they are great together, but she's strict country. She loves real twang bluegrassy country, whereas her brother likes the more contemporary kind of folkish kind of alternative thing. And if I didn't have those words to label it, it would just be good music that my children like, you see. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Right, absolutely. And it's actually interesting you bring up country music, because a lot of people have been making kind of a comparison between hip-hop and country in terms of this. You know, a lot of people were getting very dramatic with the hiatus that rap took from the top 40, saying that, this might be the death of rap, you know, but this is the final, you know, nail in a coffin or whatever. But country as a genre has gone through huge evolutions over its period, from that very traditional folk bluegrass style to the 80s and 90s with a very shiny, clean country, to now into the 2000s with a very pop country. And yet it's never died and it's never gone away. It's just evolved as time has gone on. And it's,
hold that point, because think about it. So much of today's shiny, shimmery country, commercial country, has got hip-hop undertones in those rhythms. They might not be sampled beats, but they sure sound like rhythms that came from the rap and hip-hop genre. Think about it. So hip-hop is such a huge, huge industry, and it's global now. It's coming from Korea, it's coming from everywhere.
Absolutely.
And good, and not just copies, you know, really good, authentic stuff. So what's next?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to say about the current state of music or the future of music in general?
Yes, thank you for asking. So one of my mentors was a man named Bruce Lundvall, who had been the president of Blue Note Records, president of Columbia Records, et cetera. But he always said, man, Tooks, first of all, you're a signature artist. You're an original guy and don't change. He says, because people are always going to want to hear new music.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get into this conversation right now about AI, but you know, that's the elephant in the room, right? On every subject. And in 2024, I did a presentation down at another university in Florida about AI and the humanities. And you have to ask yourself, what would Bruce say today? He would say, well, okay, well, don't worry about that. You know, that's fine. It'll be what it is, and it'll be utilized by people who utilize it. Maybe you can utilize it. But what's going to really move people is that song that talks to them, that artist that speaks to them, where they can say, wow, my world is a little bit brighter because so-and-so is around, and I can hear them live, and that kind of thing. So I'm not against these big artists that drive our industry, not at all. And I don't have to name them, you know them, from Kendrick Lamar, Taylor Swift, the others, there are a bunch of them, because we need them.
Right.
That's just what it is. I don't know if I were an up-and-coming artist today, if I would envy the position that they're in to maintain whatever that is.
Right.
But at the same time, that drives people. When Thriller was big, people went out for music, not just for Michael. So it's a lot to think about, and I'm hopeful that others will come into this way of thinking, that a conversation between two people like you and me is not just interviewing Daryl Tooks. It's us talking about something in a very open way. That's what makes great music. That's what makes genius. That's what is going to drive our industry into the future.
Absolutely. Well, Professor, thank you so much for joining me today and speaking with me on the current state of music and the evolution of rap and the future of genres. This is a super enlightening conversation. You brought a breadth of knowledge to it, and I really appreciate you being here.
My great pleasure. I think I'll go out and listen to Crosby, Stills, and Nash in my car on the way to my office.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was a great time. You know, once again, you know, Miles Davis did one of their songs, Guinevere, and David Crosby says, I don't even recognize it, but it was great. You know, thanks for doing it. So I'm hopeful that hip hop and rap will, you know, just find its place as a part of the pantheon of great music and expression, and that the artists will be saying what they want to say, and it will be inspiring people.
Unbothered is produced, edited, and hosted by Jason Acuna. Also hosted by Rihanna Winter. Audio engineering by Taylor Cox and Evan Rossi. Executive producers Regan McCarthy and Lynn Hatter. And brought to you by WFSU Public Media.